Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. I'm here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we're welcoming Damian back. And you can find him on Twitter at Damian Johnston. Our number one for the week was Jade Street Protection Services by Katie Rex and Fabian Laley. Nice.
By Katie Lang.
And our over-under for the week is characters from John Hughes movies. This may upset some people, but it's going to be fun, I think. So, also, don't forget to head to reviewandroast.com to check out all of our reviews. You can rate stuff, you can write your own reviews, and you can buy movie tickets. Let's not forget that. Let's do it, and let's do it. Like that? Is that good?
Transmitter circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
All right. So, I think the most exciting for my week would have to be I finally finished the last season of House of Cards. I don't know if anyone watches that, but you should. And you're missing out. Just saying. And I was going to say it was just...
Ask, is it the last season or just the most recent season?
Well, the most recent. It's not the last, but, you know, it was, I believe, what, season four? Season three? Season four. It ended... The ending kind of made me, like, a little pissed, but not in a bad way. Just more of a how could you possibly end it right there? Because the whole season is them, you know, leading up to the election. And there's, you know, them running for office. And they ended it, like, whatever. I won't say too much else. I already ruined it. But I also started season four of Orange is the New Black, and if you recall, anyone who's heard me speak prior, first two seasons were good. The third season I thought was not so great. Fourth season, I'm only like two or three episodes in. It is way better than season three. I was really disappointed in season three, but season four really starting out pretty strong, and I like it.
Nice.
And me, Chris, Mike, and Joe had probably one of the greatest competitive Overwatch matches ever.
Do you have that recorded?
I do. It's on my YouTubes.
Oh yeah, I have to watch it.
I make it private though. I mean, I'm not trying to ruin anybody's day, but like nobody else has their microphone set to record, so you just listen to me cry like a bitch. You know what I mean? It's like, come on, me fucking me.
I gotta change mine.
I know.
Are we gonna play after today? After the podcast?
I mean, I'm not against it. Just saying.
I have to get some Overwatching because the last couple times that you guys have played, I haven't been able to because I was doing father things.
Well, I mean, that is kind of important, I guess. But yeah.
But I actually went on and played a match just the other day by myself with Roadhog on that map that I hate, Nepal.
Right. I like
Nepal. And I was 31-8.
Right?
Go figure.
Yeah. Well, that was the best part about that, Matt. And no one cares what we're talking about right now, but the fact that I went like 80-something and 30 with Reinhardt on that one match.
Dude, that match was over, dude. I thought I miscarried.
Yeah, I thought I was going to have a stroke in the middle of it. It was that intense. But maybe I'll make it public.
It's the closest we got to sex.
For me, yeah, definitely. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've had for the week. So we'll let old man McGee over here talk.
Yeah, this week's been a bummer, a little bit.
Kind of like life in general.
Oh, just stuff at work is not awesome right now. And last Friday when I left work, I went to Barnes & Noble in Oak Brook because, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but the last time I went, I set
the
one up...
on 83, right?
Yeah. I set
dude,
up my...
You're like 5 minutes away from my house, dude. Literally.
I am aware.
Okay, I'm just telling you.
Anyway, so last time I went, I used my crappy video camera on my phone to record the movie phone guy that I think I mentioned once before.
More than once, but yes.
Okay. Well, last Friday, I was like, all right, I have a better audio recorder on my phone. I'm going to definitely try this again. So I get out of my car, I start walking towards the store, and who's coming out? Headed to his car to leave. The movie phone guy. Ruined my entire weekend.
probably ruined your entire month.
It really kind of, because that was like all I, because last Friday I don't think I did anything at work. I think I just talked about that guy, and then I think I walked around Target, and I think I looked at stuff online, and I don't think I did any actual work. So all day I'm like,
was you moped?
No, I just didn't have much to do. So I think somebody was not around, so I was able to get away with more nonsense. So I did, and I was like, 4:30, I'm headed to Movie Phone Guy. What? And then I got there, and he was gone. So weekend ruined. That's all I got, really. Oh, and I was gonna say, anyone familiar with that writer Tom King, the guy that's doing Sheriff of Babylon?
Yeah, I read that. I'm reading it.
Is that any good?
Yeah.
Okay. Because he was on Word Balloon a couple times recently, and I was listening to it on the way home today. And that guy is, like, the biggest nerd ever in, like, the best way. His enthusiasm is so, like, it gets me super stoked. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to go buy every stupid thing I never thought about reading in my entire life because this guy. Like, he told this story about one of the retreat things where he met Brian Azzarello for the first time, and he totally, like, nerded out on him. And Brian Azzarello was, I guess, like, some other guy, like, met him, and it was a similar situation, and Brian Azzarello was kind of himself and, like, ended up threatening to punch the guy in the stomach if he didn't quit nerding out on him. So, I don't know, all that, all those, like, weird stories, like, got me super pumped.
Yeah, Sheriff Babylon's actually really good. It's really good, actually.
I'm going to have to wait.
It takes place in the Middle East.
No, I know the synopsis. I just didn't, I don't know much about it other than that. Kind of upset. Like I said, this is kind of a bummer of a week. Like, I ran out of episodes of the Ruben Report to listen to, so now I gotta wait for him to start recording again. So, not a big deal, but that's kind of become like one of my favorite podcasts. So, to have it kind of go on a hiatus for a while is a bummer because, like I said, it's one of my favorites.
Word. Next.
I actually, and Brian and I have actually been talking about this. I was actually going to bring this up and spitball it with you two, since Damien just got our group text. He was just brought up to date, maybe about 6 hours ago.
I'd be lying if I said I read them very carefully.
Okay. I read the latest issue of Providence, and I even sent pictures of it, and it kind of just caught me off guard. and Brian said something about my comfort zone, which I think it kind of broke a little bit. But I saw it happening in the way. But the main character, Mr. Black, he's writing a book about the occult, and it's written by Alan Moore, so I think that'll pretty much explain a lot of what it is and what it's about. But in it, he's speaking to another character who's actually showing him around town and kind of explaining, you know, like some of the some of the more key or significant buildings of that area. So they're talking about it, and then it just leads up into them having a little, you know, little, they hooked up, these two guys. So, as I'm reading it, I'm like, how does this, like, actually take place within this story? I'm like, how does that fit in? But I think that one of the things that actually, like, kind of bothered me about it is because the guy said he was 17.
Oh,
so I told Brian, I'm like, well, I'm like, dude, how do they get away with this? Because, like, in another issue of Providence, the guy, the main character, Mr. Black, actually goes and rapes a 15-year-old girl. So I was like, okay, I'm like, how what the hell's going on here? And I was just trying to figure out. I was kind of like saying to myself, I'm like, how do they get away with something like that? I mean, I understand, like, you know, it's depicted in movies and stuff, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with it, but it's... mean, because I think it's because more like you're actually seeing it. You know, like, I mean, it's drawn, but you're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, especially with the one with the 15-year-old girl. I mean, I don't want to see that drawn or.
I think there's, it's considered within the realm of artistic expression if no person physically is harmed.
Right.
And as long, I mean, I think it falls under the jurisdiction of freedom of speech in that sense. And like I said, I mean, it's, because there's
it's a touchy subject, I would think.
There's a rape scene in Watchmen.
Right.
I mean, it's not gratuitous either, but it's obvious what's going on. And it's kind of, in a pretty big sense, it's kind
and
of...
And again, written by Alan Moore.
Right. It's integral to, like, a pretty significant story, story, or character, for example, or for lack of better terminology. I mean...
Well, yeah, that scene actually... It's kind of how the Silk Spectre, what she becomes then after that.
Right. And
or
then
her outlook, really.
Well, that, and you find out that Sally Jupiter's daughter is the result of...
Of the comedian.
Right. Spoiler alert.
I was more like thinking it looked more like in the realms of like... And like I even told you, I don't want anyone to think that it's because it was two guys... If it was a guy, if it was him and a woman, I'd be like, okay, well, still, how does this fit within the context of the story? Because he's like, I don't really see, like, it's like almost like it kind of just happens.
I was just kind of trying to figure out, like, how it plays into the story. Because as I see it, I see it as kind of like, well, I wouldn't say gratuitous, but just kind of like unnecessary. And I'm not saying because it was two men, it could have been him and a woman, I still would have been like, all right, dude, what is the point?
Yeah, throwing sex in for no reason is always kind of weird.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see it, because like I said, he's talking to the guy, and the guy, you know, the guy's name is Howard in this story. And I think the more the problem that I had with it was the fact that he told the guy, he's like, he asked him earlier on that he was 17. And I was like, okay. And then they go into that, and, you know, like, dude, why...
Well, again, if you consider the era, you consider maybe the cultural, the context of how culture was back then, like 17 may not have been considered underage in 1910. I don't know. And
yeah,
I don't.
Is Howard supposed to be H.P. Lovecraft?
No, that's who he meets then in a couple pages. And that's what I said in the group text. I was like, yeah, I'm like Damien's favorite author. He meets him later on. And I wanted to mention that, too, because when I never really read anything about H.P. Lovecraft, except I have looked him up online and looked in a little bit into, like, the history of him. Like, his biography, I guess, if that's what you want to say. And Alan Moore actually used everything that, you know... That if you were to read a biography about H.P. Lovecraft, you know, about his life, Alan Moore did his homework. Because he used a lot of that. He used a lot of that in his story. So, which I liked. But like I said, I was like, I didn't really see how that one scene fits into whatever it is he's trying to convey, I guess. Like I see the one, like I said before, with the girl. I still don't agree with like the whole thing because she's like 15, regardless if it's in a comic book and drawn and part of the story, I guess, whatever. But I see how that kind of fits in because she's obviously possessed and like whatever was possessing her then went and took over Mr. Black because he wasn't going to do anything. Because I remember, Brian, did you even look at the pages that I sent you of it?
I skimmed it. I didn't read it or anything.
Yeah, she comes in and she starts taking off her clothes, and she says something to him, and he's like, okay, I'm getting out of here. And then all of a sudden, he turns around and he's like, whatever sentence she said, he finished, which then shows you that whatever was possessing her went into him, and she's kind of like herself again, and then... You know, she gets raped. Basically. So, but whatever.
I haven't read this at all. Is it? I mean, besides these things that could be kind of considered gratuitous, is it good? I mean, it seems like
because it's that Alan. I mean, how many duds do you know of that he has written?
I haven't read a lot of. I mean, I've read a lot of the big things, V for Vendetta, Watchmen, all that stuff.
Okay, so let's put it this way. The stuff that you've read by Alan Moore have all been what?
Oh, all been great.
This is really good. It is really good. It's.
Well, you were asking me, like, you know, if I had an opinion on, you know, what was the purpose of having these.
I was just kind of showing you what I was, you know, what it was about, you know, like, I just showed you this one, I showed you that one scene, I was like, dude, I'm like, just kind of like, yeah, I guess I was getting your opinion, like, I'm like, dude, how does this play out? And probably the wrong person, I'm not saying that, the wrong person to ask is, you haven't read it all, so, or you haven't read any of it yet, so. I was just kind of, like, thinking about it for a second, really, is all it was. I was just kind of thinking about how it, like, plays into the story and, like, was kind of just asking myself, was it even really necessary to show? That's all. I understand how certain, you know, unsavory scenes or whatever, I know all these things exist in real life. You know, I don't live under a rock. Just kind of questioning, like, was it really necessary in his story? But then again, I'm not the author, so. We'll see how it plays out in, you know, issue 10, 11, and 12.
3-2.
I'm sure it actually will probably partake in something. But it was just like I was telling Brian even today. I was like, it was funny how, like, for like 3 pages that Mr. Black and Howard are actually both kind of like flirting with each other. And I told Brian that Mr. Black tells that guy Howard, he goes, "Oh, I haven't gone cornholing in like." Ages, and like right when I read that part, I was like, okay, I know what's gonna happen now.
Simpler times was 1910s.
Yeah. I haven't gone cornholing in, it's been ages. Well, here, let me help you out.
Yeah, I don't know enough about H.P. Lovecraft's writing or his backstory. It's the only thing I really know.
That wasn't even with H.P. Lovecraft. That was just another guy that just happened to be named Howard.
Right, but this whole Providence thing is set in...
Providence.
Right, but it's all inspired by or based upon the writings of Howard Phillips Lovecraft, so I mean...
Right, because that's where he's from.
Right, so there, whatever is happening in this story at least is inspired by or directly related to something that he wrote or did. Or his life in general. So.
I'll have to go look into that. Maybe you're... Yeah, I didn't even really think about that. And I'm not trying to pigeonhole that book. I know we've just discussed it before, but, you know, with, like, Crossed and stuff, but whatever. That'll be another topic. I've gone too long. Go ahead, Damien. Go.
Oh, okay. well, I mean, I spoke to you guys a little bit about my mom taking me to see a... Christian apologist tried to convince me of intelligent design last night. That was fun. Not much else. I bought a few comics this week. Bought the number one, and I also picked up The Last Turncoat.
Oh, Damien, I don't want to interrupt you, but did you get the Violent?
No, I didn't. I didn't see that.
Yeah, Violent 5 came out yesterday.
Oh, okay. I'll peek for that next week. I had my kid with me, and she was being kind of weird, so I had to kind of keep her close by. She'd sugar or something. I got a first issue of this thing called She-Wolf by Rich Tomasso.
I got that.
Yeah, I went that into it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I know this dude. He used to do stuff for Fantagraphics. And his art, I think his art's really interesting, but it just didn't really captivate me at all. Like, the writing is really disjointed and kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. And then it didn't seem to flow.
Yeah, it was almost like every other panel was taken out or something. It's just real strange. And then the third installment of Department H, I picked that up too. And that's so far kind of a slow burn, but it's good. I'm enjoying it.
What did you read The Last Turncoat?
I did read The Last Turncoat.
What did you think of it?
I was okay. It was kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt when I read it. I was like, man, this thing started off so strong, and it's kind of losing me all of a sudden.
Yeah, that last one felt really rushed. Like two things happened in the entire issue, and then, like, the big reveal. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's... I don't feel like I knew enough about this world to know why those stakes were so high for this character. Like, I don't know. It felt really rushed to me, that last issue. Even if everything had happened the way it had happened, I really felt like they kind of jammed everything into four issues, and the first two I thought were really cool and worked out really well. And the motivations for the antagonist I thought were really interesting and kind of new. Like, the whole thing, I was like, oh, this is really great. This is really interesting. And then that last issue was just kind of a letdown.
Yeah, I think the one good thing I could take away from having read all four now is that I think I'm not interested in the Arcadia, the guy that the prequel or whatever to this story. Right. I think I've lost interest now.
Yeah, I think I kind of have too. This is one of these things, if someone really liked this, if someone liked this enough to pick it up and like adapt it into another format, like a TV show or a movie or something, I think the premise is strong and interesting, but I feel like better writers maybe could delve into it a little more in a way that's just more interesting and a little more satisfying.
I feel like Matt Kent's work is kind of a slow burn in any aspect of his...
We were talking about Turncoat, actually.
I was still talking about Turncoat.
Oh, I'm sorry, sorry, sorry. I thought we were talking about Depth or Department H or whatever.
Oh, no.
My bad.
I'm still enjoying that. It's not like... not. I mean, there's a bunch that's happening, but there's really not a lot happening. I feel like I'm enjoying Department H, and I'll probably continue picking up the singles, but I think most people could probably just wait for trades and probably be a little more satisfied, because not a ton happens.
I'm actually still doing the singles myself.
I'm sorry?
But I'm still doing the singles myself. The only thing that sucks is the number one is on my Kindle, and the rest are paper.
Yeah, same team.
Well, let's hope it doesn't go anywhere, because I don't want to lose out on a great number one that's worth a lot of money one day.
Yeah. You hear that, Matt? You tank that thing.
How dare you? I'll sell my Kindle. It's got the number one on it, dude.
All right. So yeah, that's about it. That's what I read, and see, intelligent design. I don't know. I got rid of cable, and I just have the internet now. And I ended up signing up for Hulu. That's awesome.
Really?
Yeah. It's got like every TV show. It's great.
And it's got the entire Criterion library, which is also
okay. But
jealousy inducing.
Do you have Netflix and/or Prime?
I have Netflix and I have Hulu now.
See, I have Netflix and Prime, and I don't know if Hulu's right for me. You know what I'm saying?
I
feel like there's enough content on the two that I have that I don't need the third.
Probably not. No, I mean, I considered, like, would I also get Prime? Because I guess I sort of like that you buy it just all at once, and then you're just done for the year. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because it ends up being about the same, like...
But you get so much more with Prime, you know? And it's cheaper in the long run.
And sexier, too.
It is. No, I'll have to look and see what's on there.
I don't know why Brian is shaking his head, but...
Prime is all right, but it's not as good as Netflix, and I think Hulu...
I'm just saying, for a cheaper price than Netflix or Hulu, you have the movies, the TV shows, the music, the two-day free shipping, the books.
Fine.
I'm just saying, you get so much more for your money.
Okay, Amazon sales representative.
The music selection is limited at best. And the commercials in between episodes on Prime is the worst.
I don't ever have that between issues.
I always do. Whenever I watch any Amazon created series, there's always a commercial in between episodes. It's the stupidest thing ever.
And it ruins.
And it's Hulu has nothing but commercials, even in the middle of episodes.
Yeah, for stuff
you could pay more without it if you want, but I don't. I actually honestly don't mind the commercials because there's like two of them, and it gives me a chance to get up and go do something while I'm.
Yeah, I mean, the whole 10-second advertisement for another Prime show at the beginning before an episode starts ain't that big of a deal.
Not into it.
Gives you a chance to go take
a
whiz.
And let me also point out that Brian's lackluster thoughts on the Amazon Prime comes strictly from trying to get my Amazon device here to play bands that, you know, aren't spoken in English.
I play Dimmu Borgir.
Like, they don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Which Prime does have.
Right. I'm just saying, I don't even bring my hard drive to work anymore with all my CDs. I listen to nothing but Prime music all day. I know what's on there, and it's better than you think. Boom. All right.
There you go.
Jade Street Protection Service, number one. This was actually my pick. This was on Black Mask. I think we did Black Mask last week as well with Kim and Kim, so you know you can always go back and check that out if you missed it. This one starts out in what seems to be like an all-girls high school of sorts, but there's magic, and it's almost like Harry Potter, but they're also training them to almost, it looks like, to be assassins of some sort. It's very strange at first, and I wasn't really sure I was going to be that into it. And then about halfway through, when, you know, you find out some of the... I almost got the vibe, if you guys remember the Simpsons episode, where it was one of the Halloween ones where they were eating the kids. I almost got that kind of vibe, like they're, you know, they're like the one kid disappeared. They
Uter?
Yeah. So in Chocolate. This one, you know, and they're like, oh, how did they do? You know, the teacher's meeting up with people after school and... doing things that she shouldn't be allowed to do, but, you know, well, what happened to that student? The principal came in and yelled at her, and then no one's seen her since. So, you know, but there's some shady dealings going around, and I probably should go a little more. So it's like the main group of girls, you have the one girl who they claim is autistic. I don't know how true that is, but, you know, they don't really get into the details, but the one girl suggests that she's autistic, which is why she doesn't speak. But she does text with one of the other girls, and she has some kind of magic, and her magical item is a gun. The other girl's magical item is a bow. The other girl's magical item is a sword or a knife or something. I'm not too sure exactly what's going on in the school. Not too sure how this magic works. But by the time it was over, I really was kind of into it. And that was probably a terrible synopsis, but like...
Okay.
I don't really know. I don't want to say too much about, you know, what's going on with the teachers and the missing students. And but personally, like I said, for the first 30-40%, I was like, I don't know about this. This is another Kim and Kim for me. But then, like, as it went on, I'm like, all right, you know what? I really kind of dig this book. And yeah, go.
The school itself, I mean, does seem like kind of your, like I said, like a Hogwarts-y kind of thing, but it seems like there's a lot more actual danger, and the danger can actually come from people who work in the school or maybe even other students. Like, it seems like the stakes are a bit higher.
Right. It's almost like a weird prison school of magic and fighting and assassins.
What I will say is last week when I mentioned the preview of this in Kim and Kim, I thoroughly accused it of being a ripoff of Morning Glories. Well, I will remove my foot from my mouth and backtrack and say,
sound like, yeah,
I will backtrack and say that I am pretty far off base by making that accusation. So there you go. I'm an idiot. Don't listen to what I say in regards to this being Morning Glories, because it's really nothing like it.
Have to agree with you on that one.
I've never read Morning Glories, so.
Neither have I.
Take your word for it.
Morning Glories is more almost psychological horror, and it's more of
a lot of backstabbing and...
Yeah, it's not really like a school where magic and all that sort of thing happens. It's more... It's almost like... This is going to sound really like a pretty lame description, but it's almost as if you took like a CW drama and crossed it with Suspiria.
Okay. I wouldn't say that.
Well, have you ever seen Suspiria?
No.
Well, then you don't know what you're talking
about. I've read Morning Glories, though.
But this is nothing. This actually felt more, like you said, a little Harry Potter-esque, mixed almost with the character introductions from, like, an early 2000s RPG.
Right.
Like, as they meet the characters, they're like, I'm Jade, and I've got swords. Ding! Or whatever, I don't know.
It did feel like that a little bit.
Which actually made me like it more, because I was like, oh, I love those games. They were so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what the writer or artists were going for, but I was like, I don't know if that's what they're trying to convey, but that's what I see. And then I, you know, did a...
That's actually really interesting. I didn't think of it that way, but it is a lot like that. This is like you could choose which one to play after the first issue.
Yeah. And plus, like, the first page would be like, so-and-so, her grade point average is this. And then this is what her likes are, her dislikes, and her special abilities. It almost felt like they were... Yeah, like they were trying to highlight, oh, when you're going to battle this monster, assemble this team. But right now I get the feeling that the gym teacher is the big monster at the end.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to make any speculations because I don't want to sound like an idiot in 2 weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those number ones where there's still a lot to learn before you can really piece, I think, too much of the story together, but... They did give you a good, it is a really, you know, a good introduction.
I do like the Arab girl with the Thor hammer.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
The one that kept saying, I have to pee.
Yeah.
And then conjured a big toilet. That was, that's where I was like, all right, this is just getting a little too silly. And then by the end, I was like, I really kind
of
like this.
You're right. It kind of reminded me of some anime that I've seen as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely had a strong anime vibe to it.
Like a little Azumanga Daioh.
Yeah,
you're just making up words now.
Nope.
Yeah, the artwork is not too bad. The colors are
very pastel, which I like.
Yeah,
not something you see too often.
It's not they're not bright, but they're not bright, vibrant colors. But like, I'd say they're more opaque.
It's kind of a peculiar book for Black Mask, maybe because I just read the first trade of God Killer, which is the exact polar opposite of this.
Dude, what did you think of that? Just going off. Track here a little bit.
The artwork is incredible. The story is not that incredible.
I read all seven of them, and I'm like, after I was done, I was like, what the fuck? What's going on here?
Yeah, I
couldn't tell my ass from a hole in the ground.
Well, then you should go do a little basic research on anatomy.
Zing.
You get what I'm saying.
No, I didn't love it. It was, not my thing. But the art.
If I knew now.
As a visual, as a pure visual presentation, it's probably my favorite comic that I've read in probably 6 months or more. But the dialogue,
even better than the KFC one.
Oh, by far. No, the artwork in God Killer is phenomenal. It's so good.
What the fuck?
I mean, it's really dark and macabre, but it's so just. Makes me jealous that I am not talented enough to do stuff like that. That whole book could make like 500 really great album covers.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the artwork is...
I will have to check this out.
Is demented, demonic, sadistic.
See, I don't even get a lot of that from... It's
very chaotic.
It's just really well done. I love the artwork. And it's if I keep the book, it will be because I love just looking at it. But I don't like reading it that much.
The story was for shit.
It wasn't that bad. Just wasn't really my thing.
I don't see where it's going, and I can't make any sense of it besides it's like a post-apocalyptic, well, whatever, back on the Jade Street Protection Services.
Yeah. Just in case the people who did this book are listening, we don't want to think we veered off. Which we already did.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But yeah, I agree with you. It does have an anime feel.
Yeah.
It's more definitely. Like it's more like a Dungeons and Dragons version of The Craft.
Okay.
I mean, it was alright. I mean, it wasn't...
Well, I was just going to let Damien go.
I'm agreeing with all you guys. It does have a strong anime thing, and I'm actually not a huge fan of anime, so I think I wasn't super into the art. I thought the coloring really kind of saved it, though. Like, the coloring's so nice in this thing.
Yeah.
Like, the palettes are really beautiful, and I thought the story's really good. I didn't hate the art at all. I just, when I was reading it, I was like, yeah, this isn't something that would normally have attracted to me. Like, I think if I picked this up and just flipped through it, I probably would have just put it back down. But after reading it, I'm happy to have, you know, read the story, and I'm kind of curious to see what goes on, because I like these little, like, ensemble mystery school magic stuff. I love all that crap, so.
Yeah, you know, honestly, the more you look at like what happens in our world, the more I'm like, I need more positive stuff because the negative stuff is such a bummer, and the world is negative. So if we could kind of counterbalance that somehow.
Yeah, you need a nice palate cleanser. I mean, who knows? This could go real dark.
True. It'd be weird in those colors, though.
It would be. No, I was certainly really well colored. Like I don't normally notice that kind of thing. I mean, I know I should sometimes, because they go so far as nowadays to put, you know, the colorist on the cover for some comics. So I always think it's really cool. Like they'll sell like four people on there. It's like, wow, I didn't know so many. Did they have extra artists? Because back in the day, you know, it was writer, artist, that's it. Like,
right.
And then on the front page, you see letterist and colorist and all that stuff. And now they do that more. And I think that's really cool. But yeah,
I agree.
So this is one of those times where and it wasn't because I thought the art was weak, that the colors were strong. I just remember that was the first thing I thought when I first went through this. Was like, wow, this is really like vibrant and beautiful. So I'm interested. I'll probably check out at least another issue just to see what's going on. And I'm kind of a sucker for Black Mask right now. I think most of what's coming out of that is pretty cool.
Yeah, my only gripe is the wait time between issues sometimes is a little annoying, but other than that, like, I love what they're doing.
Yeah, has Four Kids number 2 come out yet?
Yep. I just saw it over the weekend.
Yeah, it did.
I was going to say, I forgot all about that book.
Yeah, I missed it then. I'll probably wait for the trade.
I'll just start subscribing on Kindle. That way I don't miss them. I guess. Maybe. We'll see. All right. Number-wise, I'm going to have to go, and I'll just give it like, well, I'll probably give it like a 7.5.
That's where I was going to go to.
Not too high, not low at all. Something I'm going to keep going with.
Yeah, 7.5. For some reason, after I was done, I'm like, man, I want to hook up a PlayStation 1 and play Chrono Crusade.
It's funny you mention that, because I was thinking Chrono Cross, but
that was the one I was thinking. Or Grandia. Grandia 2, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I probably would have liked this. I would have probably given it a 9 if it was like 1991. Because I was in high school still, and
too busy moshing back then.
Right. I wrote down 7.5. I actually thought I was going to be the one giving it the lowest score. So,
you know, like I said, it was a little. It took me a minute to get into it. Maybe on another read, I wouldn't. But it was just a little. Like at first couple of pages, I'm like, well, I'm adding this one to my Amazon sell list. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
It really turned itself around. Not that it was bad. It just didn't start out as my thing, I guess, is the way to put it. But.
Yeah, well, I read it twice, and I actually liked it a lot more on the second reading. I think if I only read it the one time, I might have gone a little lower. But I do that a lot. I always read whenever we get the number ones, I read the number one, then I read whatever else I got, and I always go back and read the number one again at the end. Mainly because I've forgotten it, you know.
Well, I usually end up reading it right before we record.
Okay.
But I'm, you know, super lazy sometimes, so whatever.
And a dick.
That I am. Just wait until we play Overwatch, son. let's see.
Play Overwatch.
I can ask you so a question, though. Like, or ask you, well, whatever. But, like, sometimes when I see books like this, I tend to just stay away from them, especially when they are, like, about high school kids, because I feel like you can't really get too, I guess, like, adult-themed with it because of the subject matter.
Yet you're thoroughly enjoying Paper Girls, which is about grade school.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I was leading up to.
Which is another fantastic book.
I was
going to
ask you guys, have you read 6 or 7?
Have
you been keeping up with it?
Which one is right there on the table?
7.
I've read 6. I have not read 7.
How good was 6?
Dude, that whole series is so
kicks
good.
Ass.
And it's so just like, it's so out there, man. You know, I feel I had to throw a man in there, but it's just so like.
I just read 6 and 7. Like, I read 6. I was like, oh, I gotta get caught up on it. So I read 6 on Sunday, Sunday night. And after I read it, I was like, fuck, dude, we're 7.
Yeah, it is.
Grabbed that really quick and read that. And I was like, dude. And then at the end of 7, I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah, it's from.
So you haven't read 7 then, right?
No. But from the first issue to where they are now,
seven,
it's
dude,
just unreal.
There's a fucking bombshell of a bomb.
Speaking of bombshell, that's another great book if no one's reading it. FYI.
But yeah, because I look at Paper Girls and then I look at Jade Street Protection Services and I'm like, dude,
I understand that you're writing a story about high school girls and stuff like that, but I like what Brian K. Vaughan actually did in issue 6 to kind of break away from that. And you know what I'm... Well, yeah, did it happen in 6? Yeah, it did. Yeah. I don't want to give it away because if Brian and Damian aren't reading it or they want to read it or whatever.
I've been picking up the trades. The first trade's like 1-5, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I loved it.
Do you like it?
Do I like it?
Yeah.
I do like it quite a bit.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, as far as like the whole not for adults thing, I purposely have bought and will buy again regular show comics because they're hilarious and super fun. And there's another book that Boom puts out called Giant Days. I don't know if anyone's heard of it.
I think with regular show,
you know what you're going to get. It's not like...
Right, but it's not tailored for adults, but it's still like...
Right.
I love regular show, and I love those characters, and I don't care. I'll read it all day long. Same with Adventure Time. But there's that book, Giant Days, and that's getting, like, tons of positive buzz. And I am very interested in reading that, so I'm going to pick that up at some point. And that's not an adult book at all. So, I mean, to me, if it's good, it's good. I mean, I'm not going to go read.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying anything like that.
I'm not going to go buy like Scholastic books and start reading like The Dog Jumped Over the House or anything like that. But you know,
no. Well, I guess I'm not conveying my opinion well enough. But like, I guess
how are we
going
to keep this Babysitter's Club together, guys?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I guess going
Hardy
back
Boys,
to our
review
with Jade Street Protection Services, I guess you know that's. I guess, I don't know. I'm just, like, sometimes I tend to, like, stay away from that stuff because I want to read stuff.
Are you asking if it's weird that a bunch of 40-year-old men...
No, I'm not saying that either. I'm not saying that either.
Because it is weird.
Well...
Well, now I just
That's not what
bad.
I'm trying to get at. I guess what I'm trying to say is, when I think of Black Mask, I think that they're... trying to gun more for the mature reader. Am I wrong in saying that, or
I think they started out that way, but I think that they have
they're trying to broaden their spectrum of readers.
They're clearly interested in propagandizing, and they want to get to the youth now and turn them red before they become Republicans in college. So that's pretty much why they're doing kids comics.
And I mean, I think some of their stuff can resonate maybe more with some slightly younger people too. I mean my stepdaughter, I gave her my copy of We Can Never Go Home after I read it, and she really liked it. And she's like I mean, I thought it was great, but it didn't resonate with me in the same way because it is about, you know, teenage kids. And she read it, she was like, this is fantastic, I'm gonna read it again. I was like, well, you can have it, it's okay. She's like, really awesome. And I mean, to her, it's like one of those things she like gives to people at school to share. Like, she really, really dug it. And I realized, like, some of this stuff actually just resonates with younger people for reasons that will escape me, because I am no longer a teenage kid, and what's at stake for me is totally different than what's at stake
for
those characters.
Sometimes I think, like, those things could actually... You could still relate to it because you've already lived through, you know...
Yeah, and, you know, there's a little bit of it, too. Like,
and you could sometimes find, like...
shit for me, so...
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of fun to, like, you know... Look back on that with all of the foreknowledge of seeing like other high school people, even if it's characters in a comic or a book or whatever. It's kind of fun to like kind of see them go through that stuff because you sort of know the ending in a weird way, at least to some of the issues. You know, every time you watch like we talked about guilty pleasure things. I think recently you guys mentioned like She's All That or something like that. One of those like teen like last party of the year kind of movies.
You see that stuff and you're like, yeah, I didn't do anything like that.
Yeah, but when you watch it as a grown-up, you know, you watch those things now and you're like it's different than when you're a kid, because now when you're watching it, you're like, oh, you know what's funny is none of you guys will ever see each other again, and you won't give a shit because you're
yeah. That's what I said. That's what I say too. I'm like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, but yeah, and when you were a kid watching those things, I mean, when you watch like Animal House or something, you're not like, well, we're not that old, but you know, when you were watching those kind of movies when you were a kid, like in the 80s and 90s, like when we were just getting out of high school or something, there was a different level. You know, it was different for us. It was like, yeah, no, I have to get laid before summer. You know, now it's just like, fuck, I want sex again. Yeah.
Well, I think with Animal House, I think we can, I look at that and I just think of shenanigans that, like, that Brian and, like, you know, stuff we did, like, because when Brian would come over. Well, Brian, you remember the time when, like, Jay took the ironing board outside.
I do.
Ran around the neighborhood with the ironing board.
I do.
That sounds super rebellious.
I'm not saying. Okay, we lived in Lincoln Park, where it is.
Dude, do you remember that one time that this guy brought out a plate of cookies? Whoa!
Put the cereal in the fridge. Put the milk
sure.
in the cupboard.
Put the ironing board down.
Okay, well, when someone runs around in Lincoln Park with an ironing board, you have Chad and Steph looking at him like, "What the hell is he doing?"
To be fair, I was in the house when that happened, so I just saw him run out the door and then come back 10 minutes later. So yeah. Who knows who actually saw him.
Nice.
Could have been no one. You might have got halfway down the block and go, oh, everyone's in bed. I'm going to go back home.
It happened during the day. But anyways, but yeah. We can all relate to you, Damien, because we all come from the same background of skateboarding and hardcore and punk rock, and that means no one likes you.
Yeah, no.
Especially in the 90s. As with now, skateboarding is vogue, and so is punk.
Is it? I don't know. I have no idea with anything anymore. I have officially transitioned to full-blown old man at this point.
Yeah. I
mean, how many times did you ever hear in high school and stuff really. some football dipshit tell you skate or die, man? I'm going to need more than my hands to tell you how many times I heard it.
Oh yeah, all the time. I loved when people used to yell out skater like it was an insult. Like, yes, I know. Yeah, thanks. It's like now when you go on YouTube and someone calls you a social justice warrior or something, I'm just like, yeah, you know, fuck you. Who gives me money? It's not insulting me. Fucking Thunderfoot assholes.
What were you saying before that though?
What was I saying?
Yeah, you were saying something and kind of got muddled there.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying that, like, just like what Chris was saying, like, back in school, people used to yell, like, you know, skater or whatever up the car, and then, like, as if that was supposed to hurt my feelings. And I was saying, like, nowadays when I go online, if I make any sort of comment on a YouTube video or something, some, like, Thunderfoot atheist type guy will call me a social justice warrior or something, like, that's supposed to hurt my feelings, too. I'm just like, that doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys knew who Thunderfoot is, but...
Is that a person?
It's a person. He's this British guy. He's a British atheist guy. And he's one of those just guys who's a total dickhead. He puts tons of videos out there, like, really sexist and shitty to women.
Misogynistic. And
yeah, he's just an asshole. I mean, when it comes to him, like, I first saw some of his videos where he was debating some Christian apologists. So I was like, oh, this guy really knows his stuff. What else has he got? And I watched some other videos, and they're just horrifying. Like, he's just a dick. I don't know. He's just a dick. So, and there's a lot of, me being an atheist, I'm more sensitive maybe to other atheists who are complete assholes, and there's a lot of them out there. And a lot of them get really pissed off if you try to say anything that defends anyone who's a minority of any kind, because they accuse you of, you know, being a social justice warrior, of trying to, which is apparently pejorative for some reason. I don't know why.
Wasn't anyway. That the band before Downset became Downset?
Maybe. God, Downset. Jesus.
You know what I want to know, though? I want to know more about what 7 inches you were listening to today.
You want to know? I'll tell you real quick. It was only two. It was a Still Life, Evergreen
Split. Why did you make it sound like you were listening to 10?
Because I'd listened to two, but then my daughter came and...
You're like, dude, I'm listening to some 7 inches today.
Well, I got through two, and then, you're a dad.
I know.
You gotta make your kid eat every few minutes.
Yeah.
But, no, I guess it sucked. I got sidetracked, because she discovered Hulu, too, and now she has all, like, the Disney XD shows, so she discovered Star vs. the Forces of Evil, so she made me turn my music off so she could hear it. But I listened to the Still Life Evergreen Split, which is great. And the Grief 16 split 7-inch that was on Pessimizer. It was also great. So Oh, the other thing is I can only I only like listening to 7 inches that are 33 RPMs because I have this fancy record player that you have to actually take the cable off and put it on a new spool to change the speed.
Whoa.
And I hate doing that.
Doesn't it's sound fancy.
Irritating.
That sounds like you have one of those old early 1900s, late 1800s phonographs that you have to crank.
Yeah. Gotta wind it.
With that has that big, like, cornucopia, whatever the
heck. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. No. So I try not to have to change the speed if I don't have to. But anyway.
Weren't those records played like at 78 RPMs?
The first records, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they were.
You can get a lot more on there, can't you? At 78?
No, less.
Less, okay. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. The faster a record plays, the better it sounds, though. But that 78, that doesn't work for those, because those were being cut in a totally different way than
right.
records are cut.
I did.
That's why all those Metallica reissues are at 45 RPM, because they want them to, like, sound better.
Yeah, because back then they had the actual needle and the thing engraving the...
Yeah.
Where now they're in a... They get the... You know, they get the steel plates of the vinyl, and then they just press the damn wax in it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Anyways.
Sweet. So, not to, get too, sad here for a minute, but there is, I did want to mention this 3-year-old who has cancer, and, somehow this kid's cousin came up with the idea, like, for the friends and family members to draw superheroes for him so that, you know, he's got something to help him, you know, with his fight that he's about to go through weeks and weeks of chemotherapy. So what they've ended up doing is they've asked, you know, anybody who would like to contribute to, draw a superhero for this kid and send it to them, whether it be... You know, digitally, but, you know, the kid's not always going to have a device to look at. So, you know, if you want to mail them, there's an address on here as well, which I will put a link on our Facebook so that you can, if anyone wants to, you know, throw together some drawings and send them to this little kid, that would be great. I wish I could draw, but if not, if you just want to do it digitally, they're using the hashtag SuperheroesForBenny. So... I'll throw that out there, and you can find our Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast, and I will put a link there, so if anyone's interested, they can inquire more into that. Moving on to... We'll go to over-under for the week, because I feel like this might take a while. Maybe it won't.
It's going to take a while.
I'm not sure, but like I said, the over-under for the week is John Hughes characters, so... I'll start off the bat, which I'm sure Brian's going to kick me under the table for stealing his overrated, but you got to go with what everyone loves, and Ferris Bueller is definitely the most overrated character. And now I only say that I say this, and I will fully admit that maybe the first time I saw that movie, I was like late teens. You know, I didn't grow up with it like everyone else did. I somehow, out of all the John Hughes movies, I must have missed that one. So I never fell, I guess, in love with it the way I did with some of his other movies. So when I first saw it, Ferris Bueller just seemed like a conniving little whiny brat. You know what I mean? Just saying.
Sloane Peterson was hot, though.
Yes.
I don't even know who that is.
See, even Damien knows.
Oh, she became my archetype for the women that I am interested in my whole life.
She is beautiful.
Well,
even now,
I admitted this before, so I'll admit it again. I saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off for the first time
at 25,
6 months ago.
Oh,
so that movie is absolutely lost on me, and I didn't like it at all. And I think Matthew Broderick was meh, and the story was meh, and it didn't. And plus, I am very familiar with the North Shore, and you don't run through a neighborhood that looks like Lincolnshire and...
Or Glencoe.
Yeah, those two neighborhoods are vastly different in terms of how old the homes are, and this guy's running through yards, and I'm like, that looks like Lincolnshire, but that looks like Winnetka, and those are like a good stretch of road apart. Then either they assume that nobody is paying attention, or B, This kid can run super far, super fast without getting tired in the shortest amount of time ever, which makes him essentially the Flash.
Well, it was just like with again with Ferris Bueller when Mike was like, they're obviously driving south down the expressway into the city, but then when they get there, they're coming in north by Soldier Field. This is the dumbest thing ever. And anyway, it's like, dude, I mean, I get it, but 99% of the people on the planet don't know that. So
no one outside Chicago is probably going to know that. But there are so many flaws in terms of directions and like
I think
look.
It's completely fine to be upset about that stuff. We pay these people so much fucking money to make movies. They can make it fit in the goddamn city it's supposed to. Just make it a fake city like Seven did.
Yeah.
Where Seven is like, it's New Orleans, LA, New York, and something else. Like, it's four different cities. Like, just make it a new, some imaginary city if you can't.
Metropolis.
It seems so, it's so lazy. No, I'm with you. I fucking hate that shit. I watched that show, The Killing. It's on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
I've watched that when it was on
it was
FX,
on AMC.
Though. Or AMC,
yeah,
I watched
AMC,
it.
And then Netflix picked it up and finished off, like, the last two seasons or something. And I really enjoyed the show for what it was. But the Seattle stuff drove me so fucking crazy. I mean, it's clear. First of all, for me, it's clearly Vancouver, and it feels like Vancouver. To me, it's like the city is like a character, you know?
Yep.
It's like you're not going to be like, all right, we're going to make remake Wizard of Oz, but Sam Jackson's Dorothy. But that's the only change. Like, that would just be so fucking hard to handle the whole time. Like, it would be funny for the wrong reasons, you know? It's so, like, there's a part in The Killing where they're, like, looking at a map of Seattle. And they're like, all right, well, he must have gone up here and had to go by here. It's the entire map of the western state of Washington. Like, the route they're tracing with their finger.
That's a pretty big area.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, it was so fucking lazy. So it's just so lazy.
So what you're saying is there's a mountain range right dead center in the middle of the city. Yes, there is.
Exactly.
I don't know why. I've never seen it, but that's what the map says. Whoops.
If for any reason you watch that show and you see the scene where they're like pointing, they're like, well, here's the park. The park is like, you know, like two, like 100 square mile area. Like, here's the park, and he had to drive over the bridge. The bridge is the bridge that Naomi Watts drives over at the beginning of The Ring, which is Deception Pass, which is this beautiful bridge that people probably fall off and die all the time up in, you know, northern part of the state, a good hour and a half from me. So it's just watching that. I was like, oh, fucking seriously, come on. Just visit for like an afternoon and then write your show.
And it's the thing, like, John Hughes was from Chicago, so he knows better. So, I mean, the downtown stuff he got right, but that's hard to really get wrong. You can't put the Sears Tower across from, you know, the Hancock Building because they're like 2 miles apart. So that stuff he got right, but because he shot it all on location. But yeah, all the directional stuff and all the, like, the backgrounds were just so off.
Yeah. I mean, everyone talks about that with their cities whenever someone makes a movie there. And it's I just don't understand why it's so hard to not, you know, figure your way around that. Because you're taking an entire city who should be proud of the fact their movie was made there, you know? There should be an extra. I mean, for a second, I was actually, when you guys were talking about Ferris Bueller's, I go, oh, they're going to love Ferris Bueller's because it's from Chicago. And Cameron pretends to be the hot dog king of Chicago or whatever in the restaurant.
Sausage king.
The sausage king, that's right. Which I really like the Cameron guy in that show, but or movie. But no, but you're right. I mean, you should be able, I mean, when they film a movie or a show or something in your city, and your city is a character in the show. I mean, because Chicago was certainly a character in that movie. I mean, so much of the stuff. I mean, Cameron's wearing the jersey of the, what's your hockey team?
That's a Red Wings, dude.
Red Wings jersey the whole time, and
that's Detroit.
Yeah, that's Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. See, I don't know.
That's okay. You're an undertow and Kiss It Goodbye, so I just let it go.
Would that be cool for people in Chicago to be wearing the Red Wings?
No.
No, not at all. Like, this
what the
town,
hell is going on?
This town
this is...
This
another example.
This town
that's
is...
a rival.
This town is unhinged when it comes to sports. It's very much alpha male when it comes to... Here's a perfect example. Back when I was like 19 or 20, do you remember those like stupid headbands that you would wear during the winter to kind of like cover your ears when you didn't want to wear a hat?
Oh yeah, they had like they kind of loop down over the ear a little.
Yeah, I bought a Green Bay Packers one, not because I love the Packers. I don't care about football, but I just thought you know, rap music is silly, so I'm going to wear this G on my forehead. Get it? Because I was being super ironic. As leaving a Denny's, and all of a sudden, this monster of a man, like, put his giant bear paw of a hand on my chest and stopped me, and he goes, what do you think you're doing? I'm like, I'm leaving Denny's? And he goes, and he just puts his finger, and he starts poking it in my forehead. He goes, what is that? I go, it's a headband. He goes, you're in bear's country. And he starts, like, flexing. I'm like, whoa, what is happening? This guy's going to murder me over a headband. So that's the kind of thing you run into.
I just think about, well, some dude flex. You know what I was thinking about, actually, Scott? I was thinking about Reinhardt's.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah, so
like,
if you...
I just picture this guy doing that. Going, dude, you're a bear. Willie, go. Give it, man. Oh.
Surprised the guy didn't have a stroke.
Yeah, if you're going to walk around Chicago in a Red Wings jersey, you better have a Michigan driver's license, or you're probably not going to get... At the very least, you're going to get, like, harassed horribly.
Well, see,
not so
kinda...
much nowadays. If you were to have a Blues jersey, that'd be... Yeah, then you would probably get...
I'm fascinated by that, then, why they chose to have Cameron do that. Was he supposed to just be, like, an iconoclast, like, he was fucking with people, or was he actually from Detroit and recently moved there, and that's why he had no friends? Like, now I'm kind of wondering if there's some character
development
that got
messed
up.
AMC usually... Well, they used to do this thing called Notes, or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a pop-up video for movies, right?
Right, and they actually did it, like, maybe 6-7 years ago, Ferris Bueller, with Notes, and they were, like, talking about all these little tidbit things, you know, that you wouldn't have known, or, like, why certain things were picked in the movie because John Hughes liked it or whatnot, but I'm sure they said something about that, and I just can't remember.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to look for it.
Speaking of pop-up video, the best pop-up video reference I've seen in the last long time is that Scale of the Summit video. And if you haven't watched it, I definitely recommend that.
All right, I'll check it out.
Do you listen to Scale the Summit at all?
No, I've heard of, though.
Yes, they're extremely talented, and that video is hilarious.
It is a pop-up video?
They did their own pop-up video about the video.
Nice. That's pretty meta. I like that.
Yeah. And Brian.
So actually, Ferris Bueller was my pick, but I had a backup. And that would be, and this is not a knock, but that would be John Bender.
What? Dude, I was going to take him too.
What? I like the character. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Save is overrated too.
But yeah, he's the guy everybody loves the quote, and he was the rebel with the flannel shirt and the jacket and the boots. And I mean, come on. He was like the quintessential version of a stoner in the 80s when told by someone who really doesn't understand what a stoner is. So that was like a stoner, like described by some 60-year-old woman from that decade, going like, my grandson with his flannel shirts and his crazy hair and his boots. And it's like, all right, I'll just write all this down. And there you go. He's our guy. And then everybody watching was like, that's not right at all.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I know some people who are a little older than me who I talk about Breakfast Club, and they're like, oh, God. I was like, what, you don't like that movie? They're like, no. Like, how old were you when it came out? And I don't remember how old it was when it came out. It was, you know, I was younger than high school age. And they're like, yeah, exactly. You saw it way before high school. You had no idea. They're like, those characters are ridiculous. And I was like, no, they're great. Don't say that.
I don't know. Like, it's not that hard to, like, nail down the attitudes of high school kids. I don't know. I mean,
especially from the 80s.
Right?
Oh, I just looked it up. I was 10 when that came out. Weird.
I don't know.
I watched that movie, like, probably once a week for 5 years.
And that was probably 11 then. Okay, right. So it's my turn?
Yeah. Yes.
Farmer Ted.
Oh, dude, you guys are both going to be fired in a minute.
Fuck that, dude. The fucking nerd trying to be fucking... like, cool with all the cool kids.
Dude, do I have to pause this, drive over there, and make you watch Weird Science?
I'm just going to go...
That movie's cool.
I know it's different.
That one's cool.
I know it's different, but, I mean, he's... I don't know.
You're talking about AMH right now. That's all I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. There's no such thing as overrated when it comes to him. I saw him at Comic-Con. I took a picture of him at Comic-Con from a distance because he looked like he was ready to punch people. But, I mean, I took a picture nonetheless.
I don't have a problem with Anthony Michael Hall. I'm just...
I think you do.
I liked him in Breakfast Club. At least in Breakfast Club, he came to grips with his nerdiness.
I don't watch TED Talk because it reminds me of Farmer Ted too much. Chris doesn't know what TED Talks are.
Talking about Ted Turner?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, we are.
He's a literal genius. Go listen to him.
Oh, shut up.
You don't watch TED Talks? You never seen a TED Talk?
No, I have not.
Okay.
They're quite interesting. You should look them up.
They're great. They're all on all sorts of things. There's one on how to tie your shoes. It's great.
The For Rodney real? Mullen one was my favorite.
Man, who is it? Who's TED Talk? Who's...
It's not a person. It's a thing. It's like a series
of... Okay, I got that.
Calm down there, Farmer Ted.
I got that once you criticized me.
It's like a presentation series. Various experts...
Just for that, I'm not going to ever listen to it.
Okay. It's
doesn't hurt us, man.
Yeah, it's basically a various experts in various different disciplines get up on stage and give a presentation about anything from organic farming to, like you said, how to tie your shoes. I'm sure you probably could find somebody to maybe do that someday.
Yeah, you can do one if you want. I mean,
if you can come up with scientific evidence for the benefits and or...
There's already a TED Talk, Why Do We Pass Gas?
Oh, well, then never mind.
Yeah, they're really good, and they're kind of bite-sized, like if you're not getting into a lot, so I'd recommend them.
Yeah, there was one guy explaining why we need more urban renewal. There was another guy, Rodney Mullen, I think, did one on how to ollie.
Interesting. Awesome. We should do one.
Well, he would be the guy to give it, really.
Did you see that new video of his that just came out?
No.
Vogue put it out.
What?
Yeah. It's the first thing he's recorded in like over a decade. And there's a bunch of new tricks on there. And he's still awesome and he's like 50-something.
Well, that just makes me sad because I never was awesome and I'm not 50. And if I tried to skateboard now, I'd just probably...
Crack the board?
I'd probably just fall face down just from looking at a skateboard.
All right, I got the video pulled up, so I'll be watching it when we're done.
Yeah, it's very arty, but it's cool. It's satisfying. And also, real quick on Anthony Michael Hall, just to add a little something. I know you guys don't watch Community too much, but he's a character on Community occasionally, and he plays the school bully, which is great. And I think his catchphrase is something like, I don't know if it's a catchphrase. I think he says it more than once. He says something about how, watch out, or he'll put your fist up your ball. He'll put his fist up your balls.
Strange.
Okay. First of all, I didn't watch all Community, but I did watch the first season, so I did see him on one or two episodes, and those were the best episodes of that show I saw.
Yeah, he's great. It's really fun to watch him be a bully. Also, the one where Nick Kroll plays a German student is really great.
That I don't remember, but I do occasionally like Nick Kroll, though.
Yeah, he can. Oh man, you ever watched the Caveman show? That show was great.
What's the Caveman show?
You remember in the 2000s when there was those commercials that so easy a caveman could do it?
Oh yeah.
And like the
Geico.
Geico, yeah. And there'd be like a caveman working on the set who's like, "That's not cool because it's like racist or whatever."
Yeah, yeah.
It's cavemen. Well, those were so successful and quite funny. That they actually did a TV show, a sitcom, like a 22-minute sitcom on, like, NBC about the cavemen living in, like, California.
Oh, I remember that. And, like, no one watched it or something like that.
No one watched it. I think it had 6 episodes before it got canceled. And they're all on YouTube, and they're all super funny. Like, I can see why they didn't do well. I can see why they got canceled. But after the fact, they're really good. I would totally watch them if I were you.
I'll have to watch those now.
Nick Kroll is just so good in that show. Anyway.
Oh, he was on that?
Yeah, he's one of the cavemen. He's great.
Okay.
So funny. Such a dick to people.
Because I was going to say, his show on Comedy Central, it's kind of like Key and Peele. Like, it's hit or miss, but when he hits, it's like a grand slam. It's just so good.
His delivery is amazing. He was, Dan Harmon has a show on YouTube that's part of the History Channel called Great Minds. Where it's really funny, and I'd also recommend you guys watch those. They're like 10 minutes long, and
Dan and this guy Spencer, who's part of his like little crew, they built a time machine that brings back famous people from history that only can survive for about 6 hours or so. And he takes them around places and goes over their Wikipedia entry with them, and it's all super funny. It's all funny people. But Nick Kroll plays Freud, and he's fucking insane. And he's so good in that one. And Dan Harmon had mentioned that Nick Kroll, his description of how good of an actor Nick Kroll was to work with and how cool he was, he described him as a or a tornado that builds houses. I thought that was a really cool description.
I'll have to see that. So,
yeah, I recommend those quite a bit, too. They're super funny. The very first one is Beethoven. I seem to remember you guys hating Jack Black, but he's the Beethoven, and it's quite good. But Jack Black's like Dan Harmon's like first guy he ever really worked with, because I did a show called Computer Man, which is wonderful. Also on YouTube.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I'm not a big Jack Black fan, but I can be swayed.
Yeah, he can be a lot to take. So
it depends on the role, really, for him. But for the most part, he's just super annoying. But I'll admit, when I first saw him in High Fidelity, I liked him. I didn't mind him in King Kong. Other than that, I'm not a big fan.
His early stuff on Mr. Show is pretty good, too. If you watch the very first, I think, very first season of Mr. Show, when he was just in the background.
No, I have not.
Yeah. It's a great scene. He's like in a, I think he's in a Slayer shirt with a shaved head at one point, just in the background. You're like, wow, that guy's going to be famous one day. That's weird. Anyway, so, I'm sorry, got way off the rails. This is my turn.
Oh, that's fine.
My overrated? So the funny thing is, when you guys said John Hughes characters, I was like, oh, God, have I seen, like, what, 2 John Hughes films? I look up, I go, nope, I've seen every single one. not every single one, but, like, a surprisingly large amount of his movies. I may have seen more John Hughes movies than any other director, creator of any other movie franchise ever. So the one I decided to put up is, I decided to say Clark Griswold.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Neat. I figured really most people would stick with like the kids stuff.
Oh, like the many different Rusties.
Right. Yeah. Well, I just mean like the high school movies. You know.
Oh yeah, I thought about that. I was like, who do I think is overrated? I was like, I don't know. I mean, it's funny the ones you guys said. I was like, oh okay, yeah, that makes sense. I can see that. But those movies are just, I was 10, 11, 12 when a lot of those movies came out, and I think back, and it's not that, like, I'm, like, defensive of them or anything, but it's just such part of my DNA, I can almost not be critical of them in a lot of ways. Like, they're just built into my system, like, Pretty in Pink, Molly Ringwald, strangely ideal, high school girl, like, I just can't, I don't know.
I liked her though because when I saw Pretty in Pink, I know I was like in eighth grade, going to high school the next year. So I saw her kind of as like that, like for at least for me, the kind of like pretty looking girl you could get because you knew she was in the kind of like in the punk.
Yeah, I think, well, he picked a great actress for that.
So like in being a skater at that point, it's like, in my eyes, I was like, yeah, she's actually attainable.
Yeah, like, she's still going to go to the dance and shit, and you're going to say it's lame, but she's also totally down to, like, sit around and listen to Circle Jerks 4 and not make fun of it.
Yeah, exactly. She's not going to criticize you if you put on Black Flag or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, no,
she'll probably say, like, put on, like, you know, Afghan wigs or psychedelic furs, but...
Oh man, the first time I ever made out with a girl ever was in was to The Cure.
Did you cry while you did it?
Is what?
Did you cry while you did it?
No, God, I should have. That'd been fucking awesome. No, regular old giant insane boner that I probably had for a week afterwards because I got to make out with a girl. Who knew that thing was going to ruin my life one day? Yeah, so anyway, Clark Griswold. That was a character who I really like in the first Vacation movie, and I think Chevy Chase is funny. Often, not always. But as those movies went on, like Christmas Vacation, Vegas Vacation, I really started to think he was just a piece of shit. And I just didn't... I was just like, this guy is so awful. Why do I give a shit about this guy? And I guess that's not really the point of the movie. I mean, he's supposed to kind of be one of those characters who most of his problems are his own fault. And I guess I like those characters, but... And then they brought back that, like, Vacation reboot, which apparently was god-awful, with Ed Helms.
Uh-huh.
I think playing Grown-Up Rusty, if I'm not correct, if I'm mistaken.
I'm not sure. I didn't see it, because I heard it was so bad.
Yeah, it was like 20% on Rotten Tomatoes or something, which is weird, because I'm surprised that Ethan Embry grew up to be Ed Helms, and I'm pretty sure... I don't know, never mind. That probably actually does work out, now that I think about it. Because I believe Ethan Embry was the final Rusty of the Chevy Chase, Clark Griswold eras. Yeah, I guess I just started to loathe the character who was supposed to be the character I cared the most about. That's why I picked him.
Alrighty. Underrated. I'm going to go with Del Griffith.
From Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Okay, yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my all-time favorite movies. And John Candy, you can't really say a bad... The guy was amazing.
Horrible racist.
Don't say... It,
really?
No.
I was going to say, Jesus. Don't ruin that for me, because he's like one of my favorites, and that movie is one of
John
the
Candy,
best movies
super
ever.
Super hilarious, Secret Klansman. No, I'm kidding.
Don't pick it.
I am bombing tonight. Oh, my God.
Pretty much can't talk about John Candy like that. I don't know. I love that movie, and Del Griffith. Like, those two...
you nerd!
What?
I wanted to pick him!
It took you that long to realize what I picked? I don't know. John Candy and Steve Martin together in that movie was, like, the original Chris Farley, David Spade, like, pair-up. Like, it was so perfect, and that movie is just great, and I still watch it, like, at least once a year.
I enjoy it. My underrated pick is Allison Reynolds. Otherwise known as Ally Sheedy's character from The Breakfast Club.
What? Oh, I thought we were on... I don't know why you said... I thought you were going overrated. I was saying I love that character.
No, she's the best character in that movie.
Yeah, okay. I can go with that.
Because she's so... Like, wants to be, like, open to everybody, but she's so guarded. And... I don't know, I can appreciate that, because, I don't know, I just can't.
Yeah, she was great.
My turn. I actually have a few. Steve Martin. Neil.
Neil Page.
Just based on that conversation alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. That definitely was formative for me as a child.
Dude, and now being an adult, how many times have you wanted to say that to not, you know, to just any kind of, like, person that is, like, you're, like, standing there and you're like, okay.
I mean, every time I've tried to travel, basically.
Are you gonna, like, do your job and, like, help me?
Yeah.
Or are you going to sit there and just talk on your phone? Yeah, that's one. Neil Page. I also have a couple. Ducky Dale.
Ducky Dale? What's that from?
Pretty in Pink.
Yeah.
Dude, that's like probably the one I've seen the least next to...
Dude, she's Ferris. About to go on that date with Andrew McCarthy. Blaine? His name is Blaine? That's a household appliance. And Uncle Lewis from Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. That's the guy who gets caught on fire, right?
Yeah.
He's like the best part of the movie.
Like, she goes, like, when... His wife goes, "Oh, did I break wind? Jesus Christ, did you see everyone clear the room?" I think I like the part when he goes, "Hey, Grizz, can you go get me a stogie?"
Oh, the Grizz. That's pretty funny.
When he calls him, "Hey, Grizz." Yeah, and he's, what did you do to my tree? He's like, what the, he's like, what are you looking at? But yeah, that's all I have.
Oh, it's not too many.
I'm sorry, Damien, if I took yours.
No, no, you didn't. I had a hard time because I like so many of the characters. I'm actually putting the Pretty in Pink soundtrack on right now. I have that on vinyl. I have so many characters, so I try to figure out a character that I remember thinking was really funny, but I barely remembered. And I realize it's probably Robert Downey Jr. in Weird Science.
Ooh.
I totally forgot he was in that movie, and I remember he had a bunch of funny lines. So he's kind of underrated to me because I forgot he existed.
So the, well, the guy that's like his friend in that movie was in Thrashing.
Yeah.
The guy that's his buddy in that movie.
The guy that plays Max. He's like,
yeah. Oh. He was the head of the Daggers. In
forever. That's the one with like Tony Hawk as a pizza delivery driver, right?
No, that's Gleaming the Cube.
Oh, it's Gleaming the Cube. Okay.
Thrashing was the one with
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin was in it?
Oh my god. Yeah, he's Corey Webster, dude.
It's been a long time.
Oh, not Josh. Or no, well, yeah, isn't it?
We're talking about Gleaming the Cube, right?
No, we're talking about Thrashing.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Gosh, I do not remember Thrashing. That was before Gleaming the Cube, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah. I barely remember that, but all I remember is Gleaming the Cube.
Yeah, Josh Brolin. He was the main character.
The only thing I remember from Gleaming the Cube is we were all pumped about it, and then we all went to the theater, and then we were all super let down.
Though Tony Hawk as the pizza delivery guy was kind of cool.
Let's all face it.
Yeah, I think all the Bones Brigade were all...
But, I mean, like, Thrashing, I mean, how could you go wrong? The Daggers were comprised of Christian Hussoy and the whole fucking Alpha team.
That's true. They were a much cooler team.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that the best skateboarding in any movie was Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
For real? Dude.
Yeah, dude. Love that movie. I would watch that one part back in junior high just because I knew it was Tony Hawk. I knew it was just the whole Bones Brigade doing all of it.
Yeah. It was awesome. It still is awesome. I used to watch that movie so much. Because I think it was the only one I had. And then when I was in my downloading movie stage, I downloaded every single... Oh, no, I didn't. I got them from my brother-in-law. I now have every Police Academy.
That Chrissy and Thrashing looks ugly now. Oof.
Well, sorry. Now she's not going to date you.
Good, I don't want her to.
I'm sorry, where the hell did we leave off? I feel like I cut everyone
Damien
off
Damien didn't say he's underrated.
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah, he did.
From Weird Science. That's just because I forgot he was in the movie, and I remember him being funny.
God, Weird Science was such a good movie, too. You forgot to hook up the doll. No?
I like the part when they're in the bar.
Yes. Now, anywho.
I'm stuck on skateboarding and movies.
Yeah.
I can only think of one movie Jason Lee ever skateboarded in. Is there more than one?
I don't think so. I think once he became a serious actor, they basically told him he can't anymore because they didn't want him to get hurt and then miss filming. You know what I mean? That's right. The rumor I always heard. So that's
he started getting artsy fartsy though back when he was on Stereo, when he did Stereo with Dune.
I think in Kissing a Fool, I think is a movie I'm thinking of where he's like a tech guy who has like a skate park in his backyard and he like skates it.
Kissing a Fool, he's a novelist.
Oh, is he? Gosh, what is the movie I'm thinking of then? It's right around that time, like 97, 98.
So it was after Mallrats and before Kissing a Fool. I don't know if I've seen it.
I don't know either. I was trying to remember.
In Mallrats, he's like a scumbag comic book collector.
Just like us.
Yeah, he's pretty great. No, that's in New Jersey. I was like, that's Chicago? No, it's Paramus.
Was it Almost Famous?
No, no dude. It's, how
Mark Maron's in that, though.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yep.
Neat. Never seen
that's
it.
That's the thing at the beginning of his show where you hear, lock the gates. That's him from Almost Famous saying, lock the gates Sweetwater? Is that there? Sweetwater?
Was it Mumford, the one where he was a skateboarder?
Oh, it might be
Jason
Mumford.
Lee. Yeah.
I think it
Jason
is Mumford.
Lee.
Okay.
Yeah,
still water. What? What was that meow?
I don't know.
That was Brian.
Oh.
You know what's actually kind of funny? If you go to Jason Lee's IMDb page, the Blind Video Days is on here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Where he talks about you got to take him to Benihana if he does some rail or something.
It might be. That's a possibility because I highly doubt any of those other skaters are in there.
Dude, whenever I think of Jason Lee, I just think of that one picture that was in my Thrasher magazine of him looking like a homeless guy holding a sign that said, "We'll skate for food."
Yeah, dude, I always thought he was so cool.
Yeah.
I had that hanging up in my locker.
Yeah, all those dudes, the blind guys and the H Street guys are always, I thought, the coolest dudes.
Yeah, I was going to say the blind video and Hocus Pocus are the two best videos ever made.
That is awesome.
I agree.
Actually, the H Street, This Is Not the New H Street video was probably my favorite, though.
Yes, yes. Dude, and for Matt Hensley's part alone.
I'll go put on Hocus Pocus right now.
We should save this and do skate videos for Over Under at some point.
Dude, we can do that next week.
I am done. Oh, yeah, done deal.
We did it already, didn't we?
Well, yeah, I think we did, but I mean, there's going to be more than one.
Well, okay, well, I'll do parts. Overrated animal chin.
We've done Hey, now.
We could do parts.
Yeah,
backside air, comb your hair.
I'm kind okay, of, I like it. I mean.
No, it's terrible. But it's terrible in a good
way. Yeah, but they kind of made up for it with Public Domain and Ban This.
Yeah, Public Domain, man, that thing. First time you see Ray Barbie do a 360 kickflip, fucking head exploded. That was so good.
My head exploded when fucking Frankie Hill fucking ollied down fucking 20 stairs with that big, huge ass board.
I know. It's like fucking throwing wheels on a coffee table and somehow making it alive down there.
Well, yeah, I was like, dude, I was like,
I know I've showed Chris the video probably more than once, but I put in our little Facebook chat a part you need to see, Damien, so
okay. Keep
an eye out for that.
I will.
But we should move this on to best thing ever. So, last week I hinted that something might be happening, and it did. And last Friday, I went to Hollywood Casino and saw Penn and Teller.
Oh, right on.
So that was the best thing ever. That was so good.
That was so sad.
Why is that sad?
I don't know.
He's not a fan of Penn and Teller.
No, I don't mind them.
That just reminds me I need to listen to Pendulette's podcast some more. I haven't listened to it in a while.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you've seen their magic show, I mean, obviously they do a lot of the same tricks. And, you know, they rotate them in and out. So I've seen some of the things they did, but it was still cool to see in person. But I love their style of magic because, like, while they're doing it, but then they also, like, try to educate in a way, you know, which is kind of awesome. And, yeah, it's Penn and Teller. Like, how could you not like them?
I like when they show you how tricks are done because it's almost, like, more impressive.
Right. Yeah, cool. They've actually done that with they did it with a couple of them. Actually, I think most of them they showed you, but it was it's totally the best, and it was free, so nailed it.
Well, there you go. That's awesome.
Mine is today. I was just bored because I had nothing to do at work, and I was looking for a photo editor, and I found a website called Pixlr, PIXLR.com.
That I know Pixlr.
I never heard of it till today. It's not quite as robust as Photoshop, but for free you can essentially do probably 70% of what you can do in Photoshop for free. I mean, I'm sure you got to sign up to get whatever, but yeah, it's actually not for a web editor. It's pretty great. So I was pretty stoked because I had nothing to do today other than to put my coworker's face on someone else's face to make fun of them because I had literally nothing to do today. So,
neat.
Yeah, that's pretty good because all the other web photo editors that I've found so far are bare bones and they pretty much all suck. So I'm pretty stoked that I found this.
That's awesome.
I'm easily amused.
I'm into it. Cheers, cool. Chris.
I just saw that Mark Millar and Greg Capullo are doing a title for Image.
That's been news for months.
Oh. Well, it says posted July 14th. Well, excuse me then.
Neat.
So is that your best?
You ruined it.
Is that your best thing ever?
You just ruined it for me, so go to hell.
Okay.
Taking you off my Facebook. That's what I'm doing right now. Taking them off.
You need a tissue or?
Maybe. Go ahead, Damien. I don't have anything anymore. Brian ruined it.
Well, I had a couple things this week that were kind of neat. I found out one that the band Slade. Do you guys know Slade?
Maybe.
They do the songs that Quiet Riot covered and got popular for, like Come On, Feel the Noise. They're British or Irish or something. They're pretty awesome in a 1970s sort of rock way. They played a show in San Francisco on the day I was born, and I found the entire show on YouTube. It's not my favorite era of Slade, but it's pretty great, and like I said, I was born like about 100 miles or so from San Francisco, so I was like, wow, my mom was in labor and Slade was playing, and here's what was happening while I was born, and I thought that was kind of cool. And then the other thing is, today I went to a record store, and I generally don't buy records because I can't really afford them, and I'm pretty sure it's a bootleg, but I bought the Shellac Four Friends 12-inch, which is like I said, I think it's a bootleg because Shellac put out this 12-inch in like 1995 that the only people who got it were the ones that were thanked on the back of the record.
Wow. Nice.
And I guess when they gave it to you, they circled your name and handed it to you. So if you ever sold it, that it would be obvious who sold it. And there's like a little thing for like, and for all those people who, you know, and for those we forgot to name on here, your name belongs on here, and here's where you put your name. And like, so they would write, like, if someone that worked at Touch and Go didn't get a record, they wanted to give them one, like, oh yeah, so they'd write their name on it and hand it to them. So like, no one sells this record. It's just this like legendary record. Like if Shellac gave it to you, probably give a shit enough to keep it forever.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure, like I said, the one I got is a bootleg, and it wasn't very expensive, but it was very old. It was clearly, you know, 20 years old. But I'd never heard it before ever in my life. And I put it on today, and before we started the podcast, while I was reading comics, I was able to listen to the whole thing, and it's great.
I did hear Scott has it, their new album, or new-ish album, and that is also pretty great. I need to get that.
Is it Dude Incredible?
Sure is. And that record is incredible.
Yeah, it's got the monkey on the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Well, they knew their audience with that one.
The one before it, that Excellent Italian Greyhound, I was kind of like hit or miss on. Some of it I really like, and some of it I'm kind of like, it's all right.
We end the show with a song off that record.
I know. It's just not my favorite of their records.
Yeah, I agree. It's not my favorite either. I like it quite a bit, but, you know, to me it's a good record, but not a good Shellac record, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
To me, Terraform will always be their best album. So.
So good.
Yeah, Terraformer, At Action Park, Thousand Hertz. Those three. Thousand Hertz is not, to me, my favorite record either, but there's a few of the songs. There's like two songs on that record that are like, I think, my two favorite songs. So.
Yeah.
The very last song is my favorite Shellac song ever. Yeah. Because that was the first song I ever heard by them when I saw them at the Congress Theater, and I was like, who is this? They're the best.
Yes. Yeah, that song and Squirrel song are so good.
Yeah. I was actually listening to that song this morning.
Nice. On Amazon Prime?
No, on my iPod.
Oh, okay.
I have all their stuff on my iPod, and I just shuffle all like 900 songs every day because I can never decide what I want to listen to. You know? So I just put it on shuffle. It's like my own private radio station.
All right.
That's everybody?
That's
everybody. Well, all right then. That's our show for the week, and you can follow me on Twitter at XorsonX. You can follow Brian at Pure Rock Theory. You can follow Chris at SkateXEdge. You can follow Damien at Damien Johnson. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast. And don't forget to go to Review and Roast and join in all the funs over there. And don't forget to go check out our DC Rebirth Week 5 podcast, which came out last week, and we should have Week 6 coming out in the next couple of days, so keep an eye out for that. And, have a good week.